This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Bob Garfield is off this week. I'm Brooke Gladstone. So, a new COVID safety precaution has been making the rounds. Double masking.
So if you have a physical covering with one layer, you put another layer on, it just makes common sense.
Sound advice. Why are we only hearing it a year into the pandemic? Here's Dr. Fauci back in March of 2020.
China and South Korea, whatever, everybody's wearing a mask. Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
But East Asia's had more experience with SARS viruses than us, wouldn't they know?
The coronavirus outbreak is prompting the U.S. Surgeon General to make a desperate plea to the public. Stop buying masks. They're not effective in preventing general public from catching coronavirus.
Do you sense that maybe the authorities didn't trust us to do the right thing, like saving medical-grade masks for frontline healthcare workers? Maybe their impulse was right, but their method was so wrong.
Wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
Our own Dr. Fauci even said they carry certain risks.
And often, there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
Wearing a mask can also keep you from touching your face. But some physicians disparaged mask wearing as akin to carrying a rabbit's foot. Others suggested it might give us a false sense of security.
The Chicago Medical Society is worried that a call for general mask wearing will reduce social distancing.
Meanwhile, taking mask myths to another level, Texas Republican Representative Louie Gohmert blamed his mask for giving him the virus. Darn mask.
I can't help but wonder if by keeping a mask on and keeping it in place, that if I might have put some germs, some of the virus onto the mask and breathed it in.
Muddled messaging in Europe and the States bred confusion and suspicion, reckless optimism and hopeless pessimism, first over masking, then over vaccines, now over the variant strains. There are consequences to withholding the full truth, even to get the public to behave itself.
It creates this opportunity for mistrust, especially if the authorities don't really come clean.
Zeynep Tufekci is associate professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and contributing writer at The Atlantic and The New York Times.
They did kind of say, well, the evidence changed, but Hong Kong and Taiwan clearly had evidence. So the evidence hasn't really changed. It's more like, well, we were behind the evidence, which is more honest.
In your newsletter, Insight, on Substack, you quote David Leonhardt of the New York Times, who says, a version of the mask story is repeating itself. This time, he said, it involves the vaccines. Once more, the experts don't seem to trust the public to hear the full truth. What is the truth that we're not hearing?
What he's trying to get at is the framing around the vaccines. We have hit unexpected, amazing home runs with these vaccines. The first two that have been authorized in the United States, the Pfizer BioNTech and Moderna, you don't get any COVID at all for 95% of the people. And for the rest of the 5% in both the Moderna trial and the Pfizer trial, there's about 60,000 people total. Out of that 60,000 total, there was a single severe case among someone who was vaccinated.
Even among the 5% for whom it wasn't, quote, effective, their cases were mild except for a single case.
One case qualified as severe, and her clinical description was that her oxygen saturation got down to 93%, but she didn't need any other medical attention. She didn't need to be hospitalized. And that's the only case. Now, contrast that with the messages full of, well, we don't yet know if they prevent transmission, or you can't take your masks off yet, or you can't do this and you can't do that. Those things aren't completely false, but they have to be framed correctly. We do think it's going to blunt transmission. We just don't have an exact number yet. In the preliminary study, Moderna found that even asymptomatic infection was down by 2/3. So that's really strongly suggesting that it's going to blunt transmission somewhat. Publicly, we'll probably be wearing masks for a while because in public, you don't want to create two classes of people, and you also don't know like who's vaccinated. But of all the things to emphasize right now, we have vaccines that are better than anything we had hoped for, basically almost complete elimination of severe disease. So instead of celebrating this, because life is going to get back to normal when enough of us are vaccinated, it's full of headlines warning people about all the short-term limits. And a lot of anti-vaxxers have latched onto this, saying, if the vaccines are so good, why are there so many articles warning you nothing's going to change? People are tired and fatigued. And when we didn't get our mask messaging right, we damaged compliance and masking. And when we don't communicate the real upsides of the vaccines, when we don't get our messaging right, we do damage to trust.
Now come the COVID variants, and let's start with the ones first encountered in the UK and South Africa. I mean, we should be worried about a more infectious strain. They are 50 to 70% maybe more transmissible. We were also told, though, at the same time that they were not more deadly, but it seems that if you have more cases, it means more deaths. And I recently heard on the BBC that these strains may, in fact, be more deadly. But you've taken issue with the worries that the media are now choosing to spotlight, right?
Right. I started seeing the data, and I thought, oops, we got adaptive evolution here. Question number one is, what do I do in the short term? You have to up your precautions, because if it's transmitting 50% more than it used to, it means that the environment that you got away with last time, you're 50% less likely to get away with. We also have seasonality working against us, right? These coronaviruses are usually seasonal. This one appears to be so. So we have, you know, the winter dry air. Well, what about the vaccine? Moderna came out with a study which was really encouraging, which showed that while both variants, UK one less so, and the South African one is a little more dangerous, they were lowering the neutralizing antibodies. But neutralizing antibodies are but one part of the immune system, and they were so high to begin with, they were clearing the bar. So what we were hearing was that, you know what? It's going to work.
So when you objected to the San Francisco Chronicle writing, Moderna's coronavirus vaccine protected against the mutations of the virus first detected in Britain and South Africa, but the antibodies were 6 times less effective at neutralizing the South African variant, it made it sound like it was...
6 times less effective. They gave you the very wrong impression. The thing that went down sixfold is the neutralizing antibodies. That doesn't really translate into vaccine efficacy. I mean, I realize this is kind of getting into technical weeds of immunology, but if you're writing a headline, that's what you should know. If you just put the sixfold decrease in the headline, you're going to freak people out because people are going to think, wait, like, did we go from, you know, 90% to 30%?
So how effective is it?
Most people think it might go from, say, 95% to, say, 90%. Nobody's expecting to go down to 30%. So the correct message is you and I should not be discussing neutralizing antibodies. It's not the public's area of expertise. And I'm just telling you what the scientists have told me. It will have a small effect Plus, Moderna said they were working on a booster for the new variants. And a lot of people were saying, well, if they're working on a booster, that means this one doesn't work. Whereas they clearly said, you know, we're just kind of keeping an eye on this. So my sense from seeing that press release and the paper, they put the paper out too, I was like, this is great. And they're already working on the booster. That's exactly what they should be doing.
Some other framings you didn't like. Vaccines have been oversold as the pandemic exit strategy, from the Financial Times and a tweet from NPR, which said Moderna finds COVID-19 vaccine less effective against variant.
It's fine to say the efficacy will take a marginal hit. And also to tell people the variant is a real threat. You're unvaccinated now if you're like most Americans. You got to be more careful. Let's be straight. Let's say the good stuff. Let's not give misleading information. Let's not put six-fold decrease in neutralizing antibodies in a headline as if that's something the public should be expected to understand. And that's going to make people not want to take the vaccine when they should jump at it. The media has to examine how it switches. Like there's this herding effect where they dismissed the pandemic risk. They dismiss masks. They did this for a long time. And then when it flipped, there's a lot of doomsaying now. I'm seeing articles saying vaccination's not going to get us out of it. Yes, it will. The problem is we don't have enough.
You've said that the confused messaging, the wrong messages were being spread by officials long after the evidence was in. You wrote, maybe worst of all is the willful amnesia. It sometimes feels as if these failures were never made, as if we all just updated our COVID-related guidelines when the evidence came in. In reality, you said, most Western nations were tragically lagging in their response. Also the WHO.
You know, I talked about the CDC and the World Health Organization being late with mask guidance. We also didn't get ventilation guidance till fall. And it was a confusing thing with the CDC. We got something posted and then got it deleted and it got back. And I wrote an article about ventilation in July. Then I got inundated by people who were trying to plan how to open schools back, all sorts of things like that. And they're like, nobody told us any of this because it wasn't part of the CDC guidelines. And the World Health Organization kept like talk about hand washing and disinfecting, which has a place, but it doesn't make sense to disinfect every surface and not open a window when we know that makes a difference. There are all these things in which we were late, and I know that we were late because Japan wasn't late. Hong Kong wasn't late. The amnesia part is that once we catch up, we act like nothing happened. They just sort of say, we got more evidence. Well, you know what? Japan had mass guidance, aerosol transmission, over dispersion, which is like the clustering, in February, right? Why did it take us till fall? And with the World Health Organization, it took till December of 2020 before they started telling people to wear a mask indoors, regardless of distancing. Like that's 10 months late. So there has been no explanation or searching of what on earth has been going on.
So this comes back to your first point about accountability.
And even if it's partly because, you know, they were working on the really difficult conditions with the president, we still need that conversation. And with the World Health Organization, that's a whole other thing. Like, we need that conversation because these are institutions we need to trust. You know, the National Transportation Board, they do these no-blame postmortems where the emphasis is in trying to understand exactly what went wrong.
Lessons learned. The military does it too.
Lessons learned rather than just, you know, fire people. We need that because, you know, for all my criticisms, they're excellent organizations.
They're all we have.
And they are what we need right now with the new administration. Like, I know it's been just a week, but it's urgent. We need our public health authorities to give us clear, actionable guidance on if they say three-layer mask is better, I don't want to play guessing games with old t-shirts. I want a certified cloth mask that I can purchase. If somebody's high risk or in a poorly ventilated environment, I want them to be able to say, where can I buy an N95? How do I best put it on? How do I take it off? How do I reuse it? They're not like some failing organization overall. They're amazing people. Whatever happened last year, on the whole, they're, of course, more right than wrong.
Zeynep Tufekci is associate professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and contributing writer at The Atlantic and The New York Times. Coming up, the perils of intellectual property during a plague. This is On the Media.